Chapter 29. Alpha, Ultra, Betrayal. Primary location Alpha shook to the beat of the mountain's quantum pulse. The atmosphere crackled with barely restrained power. Sparks flew from armor. The Mechanicum machine showed a galaxy of red lights. Outside, the red of the ruin storm was giving way to the pale steel of pre-dawn. Dantioch glanced at it anxiously through the cave mouth leading out onto the promontory.
The machine is ready. We may commence your search for the nightfall now. If we find the vessel, you will not be able to translocate until after the light event. Only then will the quantum engines be fully charged.
Very well, said Krukesh. Proceed.
There is no guarantee this will work, Lord Krukesh. The Pharos has a limited range. It may not grant what you desire.
If it does not, said Krukesh, Captain Pollux will suffer for it.
Pollux hung limply from a torture cross, barely conscious. Mercifully, he was not seriously hurt, although blood streaked his skin and pain spikes jutted from every interface port in his skin.
Think on the nightfall. You know it well? Said Dantioch.
I have walked its decks many hundreds of times, said the Chiroptera Lord condescendingly.
Then remember it. Call it to mind. I cannot focus on something I do not know the location of, but your desire...
Dantioch adjusted the machinery, opening the conduits fully.
That will find it for you.
Krukesh turned to face the focus field. He breathed deeply, concentrating, but arrogant and assured of his success. Dantioch moved with care. What he was attempting had to appear harmless. The black wall of the cave disappeared. The focus field of the Pharos lensed, displaying a smoky nothingness. Dantioch tensed. Krukesh curled his lip at him.
Warsmith!
Lord Krukesh, said Scryvok.
He pointed to the focus field. A wavering in the air became an image, unfocused and bleary.
I will see it, Warsmith. Show me the flagship of my legion.
The image doubled. The two superimposed images slid over each other. The rumble of the Xenos engines began to reverberate in the walls.
Give it to me,
snarled Krukesh. His fists were clenched.
I am attempting to focus the Pharos. I require time.
The picture disappeared. Dantioch limped along his array of instruments.
Tear out Captain Pollux's tongue, snapped Krukesh.
A Night Lord grabbed Pollux's head. Hard ceramite hands tipped it back. A second forced his jaw wide, and a third brought up a vicious pair of angled pliers, long and thin, the end tipped with a curved pair of shear blades, the grippers studded with spikes.
No, said Dantioch. Do not harm him. I am doing as you ask.
Krukesh shook his head.
Too late.
The shears were forced into Pollux's mouth. At the scrape of metal on his teeth, he came fully awake. He threw his head from side to side, then convulsed, the pain spikes burning into his nervous system. Dantioch became desperate. Affection of this kind was a weakness he knew, but Pollux was his friend. Pollux moaned as the shears nipped at his tongue.
Ah-ha! Said Krukesh.
Upon the stage, a scene gathered, swimming from obscurity into sharp focus. The command deck of the battleship, umbrous and sinister.
The nightfall! Dantioch holds true to his promise. Hold your actions, brothers, said Krukesh.
The Night Lords by Pollux stopped rooting around in his mouth and withdrew their implement. Pollux spat blood.
I will kill you all, he said.
You see, Dantioch, he speaks.
Krukesh smiled at the image with satisfaction. On board the ship, pale, malnourished men and women worked in near silence at their stations, their every action watched by darkly clad night lords and haughty human officers in uniforms of deepest blue.
Brothers of the Legion, he called, heed me.
They showed no sign of hearing him. The image dimmed.
Dantioch, he growled.
My lord, I must increase the power.
Dantioch moved as quickly as he could, twisting dial after dial on the instrument banks. He opened every conduit to the quantum engines. Primary location Alpha trembled with barely channeled energies. A low moan blew through the tunnels. Infrasound thrummed in their bones.
Brothers! Yelled Krukesh.
This time the crew and warriors aboard the Nightfall did hear him. Space Marines whirled around, guns out. The command crew began shouting, orders and queries passed back and forth. One legionary came forward. He was helmetless, his armor inscribed with the rank insignia of Exalted Terramaster.
What is the meaning of this?
It is I, Krukesh the Pale. Do you not recognize me?
He held up his arms.
I recognize you, Terramaster Thandamel.
The warriors maintained their alert.
By what means do you communicate with us? A Xenos beacon, lately the property of the 13th Legion, now mine.
Impossible. A trick.
It is not a trick, dear Thandamel. Such things I have seen. I will return to you. Sevatar is in chains. The Night Haunter is missing. We must act.
The Night Lords opened fire. Shouts and yells came from out of sight. Krukesh laughed.
I can step aboard at any time I wish, but you cannot touch me. Listen to me. Our Primarch has deserted us, and his lapdog first captain is captured. Our fleets are scattered. We must band together, my fleet and yours, and rendezvous with the rest. The time for licking our wounds is done. Sevatar was too quick in dividing our forces and has failed dismally in reuniting them. I am here now to save us all from disaster.
And do the warriors of the Atramenta hold with this opinion?
Said Thandamel. He nodded to the Terminators behind Krukesh.
Their loyalty is mine to command. Those who could see no sense have been disposed of. They see now that I am the only hope for the Legion.
This gave Thandamel pause.
Surely, you see their support gives me legitimacy.
Thandamel gave a sharp, unfriendly smile.
And by this logic, we should bow to you like them. I am Chiroptera, said Krukesh. Sevatar was your commander. He is not aboard your ship. He is missing. He abandoned us. I am Ranking Lord. Sevatar appointed you, said Thandamel. How do I know you will not betray us as he did?
Krukesh laughed.
Come now, Thandamel. I would not be so unsubtle. I only wish to see Sevatar's orders to regroup fulfilled. Prepare yourselves for my arrival.
Corvo stepped into primary location Ultra carefully. The builders of the Pharos had not cared for guardrails. A sheer drop ended the passage, only passable thanks to a walkway that had been installed there by the Mechanicum. He stepped onto it and looked out over a huge cavern, bigger than any other they had yet encountered. As with the rest of the Pharos, it was fashioned of altered stone, glossy and black as interstellar space, night trapped in vitreous form. That commonality aside, the room was singular. Here, the ergonomic shapes of the tunnels gave way to precisely carved angles. Six massive structures occupied the floor, huge things in the shape of metal ingots. Ribs stretched out of the top floor, up their sloping sides, and onto the roofs of the structures. They did not meet, but left a sharply angled gap down the center of each. Window slots cut into the sides of the structures alternated with these ribs, and these glowed with a vibrant green light. The machines appear to have no motive parts, being made of the same flawless stone that made up the tunnel walls, but the chamber hummed with their industry. A sensation of great power pervaded the room, as palpable as a prickling feeling on the air that grew thicker as they went further in. Corvo found it reminiscent of the funerary monuments of the ancient Egyptians of Terra, a world of granite geometries intended for an eternity. Were it not for the metal clamps suckered onto the machines and the thick cables that snaked from these to transect the glossy floor, Corvo would have walked cautiously. The clumsiness of the human technology spoiled the purity of the design, but Corvo found them fitting, manacles of plastic, steel, and glittering optics chaining the alien devices to mankind's will. The Mechanicum had tamed the Pharos. Obadiah stepped to the railing around the walkway and rested one hand lightly there. The boy's face was pale in the green light. "This is Primary Location Ultra. Here, the quantum engines that power the Pharos and make its operation possible are housed," he said. More borrowed words. They sounded hollow, inadequate to describe the might of the ancient sciences there arrayed. "The Mechanicum's governing and moderating machinery is in the galleries below the walkway." He pointed to a flight of stairs coming off the catwalk. These went down some 60 meters, divided up by short landings.
"Nova Company veterans," ordered Corvo. "To your task. We must be swift. The enemy will be here soon."
He looked across the chamber. Many other tunnels opened into Primary Location Ultra, some lined with Imperial walkways, others gaping, unrailed and perilous.
"Neophyte, how many of these lead back to the way we came?"
"Nobody knows," said Obadiah. His eyes were wide. The word haunted sprang into Corvo's mind. "Half a dozen at least. Some of them have yet to be mapped. You can go everywhere from here. Those there go to the mountain peak eventually." He pointed out a trio of square-cut apertures on the far side, the middle one reached by a prefabricated staircase. This was news Corvo had not wished to hear. He must divide his forces, or risk being cut down by the Night Lords if, when, they came into the chamber.
"Crassus! 3 squads, form a demolition team. Take out the Mechanicum machines. Be careful not to damage the Xenos devices." "Immediately, Captain," said Crassus.
His lieutenant went about his task efficiently, leading 35 men down the stairs. Corollus, the Strike Force's tech marine, went with them. Corvo ordered his heavy weapons troopers and support squads into position, covering the walkways and major tunnel entrances. He called up some of Gilliman's writings on similar unusual deployments on his helm display. Consulting them, he became engrossed, organizing the defense until, sometime later, Corollus contacted him. A steady pulse played under his message, the voice of the machines intruding on their vox.
"Captain, I have something you should see." "Affirmative. Neophytes, come with me. You are vulnerable here."
Obadiah, Tebakai, and their squadmates fell in behind the captain, and they all went down the steps together. Corvo's auto-sensors registered high static buildup and discharged the energy through his boot soles. The demolition detail ranged throughout the structure, targeting the Mechanicum additions to the Xenos devices. A long row of machines lined the wall under the walkway, plugged by snaking cables into the quantum pulse engines. The cables had been prepared for destruction with phosphor cords, and already melter bombs on remote detonation settings were clamped to the individual units of Mechanicum cogitator arrays. A number of servitors prowled the aisles on maintenance patterns. They offered no aggression, but were gunned down when encountered by his warriors. Corollus waited halfway down the long machine banks. Corvo picked his way over the cables to meet him.
"Captain," he said, "it is this that concerns me."
He pointed at a round screen covered with green lines that oscillated to a steady rhythm.
"Explain it," said Corvo.
The readings meant nothing to him.
"The Pharos is in use, Captain. These machines monitor the power output of the quantum engines." "We are just in time, then."
"Perhaps. At the moment, they are not fully active, but something is happening. You hear the engine pulse on the vox? It is steadily increasing."
"Do you know what?"
A shout went up from the upper reaches, and the crackling, repetitive booming of heavy bolter fire echoed around the chamber.
"Contact! Contact!"
"The Night Lords have encountered our rearguard," said Corvo. "Squads 4 and 7, leave the demolition detail. The rest of you, conclude preparations for destruction."
His men went about their business quickly, placing bulky melter bombs on every piece of human technology they came across.
"Corollus, monitor the situation."
"As you wish, Brother Captain."
Snake-like, his servo-harness's arms rose up, the plasma cells on its inbuilt weapons glowing as they charged to fire. They pointed towards the walkway as Corollus returned his attention to the cogitator displays.
Neophytes, remain with him,
ordered Corvo, and ran back toward the stairs, drawing his sword as he went. The Night Lords were attacking four entrances at once. Corvo's men, although superior in number, were hard-pressed to cover every entrance. The enemy broke through one of the squads on the far side of Primary Location Ultra almost immediately and took up station on the gantry where they laid down a murderous barrage of fire. The Ultramarines defending the other entryways were caught in a crossfire. Those down on the engine room floor found themselves exposed. An Ultramarine in the center of the room was cut down by a plasma bolt, and his melter bomb spun out of his hand. The demolition team ran for cover as bolt rounds and worse hailed down at them. Gunfire roared all around the chamber. Where it hit the black stone, it brought forth flares of green fire.
Squads 4 and 7, cover entrance beta. I'm on my way. Demolition detail, form up. Take shelter under the gantry. Come at them from below.
The stairs lay ahead. Corvo thumbed the activation stud on his power sword and ran faster. A cry came from above as a Night Lord leapt the 60 meters down. Corvo dodged to the side just in time, trusting to the drop to disable his enemy. The Night Lord landed with a thunder of ceramite on stone, skidding sideways on the smooth surface. As he fell, he caught Corvo a glancing blow, sending him staggering to the side. They recovered simultaneously, and Corvo found himself grappling with a helmetless warrior, his arms bare of plate and caked in blood. With gory fingers, his enemy grabbed at the rims of Corvo's pauldrons. Corvo drove him back, slamming him into a walkway support, bending it. He followed into him, pushing the warrior and casting him into the vitreous walls. Armor sparked on hard black stone. Corvo was free of the warrior's grapple and came up into guard with his power sword in his hand. Energy fizzed around it, the field flaring in the exotic radiations of the engine chamber. Corvo's opponent was a savage, his armor scratched and scored and covered in blood. The broken remains of skulls and bones hung from cords looped through holes in his shoulder guards. His bare face was wild with a barbarous joy unbefitting a space marine. The pale skin of his cheeks and lips smirched with the life fluids of his victions. In his right hand he carried an iron sword. The plainness of the blade belied its dark nature. Corvo instinctively recognized it. He had seen warpcraft at work before on Astagar, wielded by Lorgar's fanatics. This weapon carried the same taint as the corrupted Titan Felghast. He was sure of it.
Have you fallen so far that you cavort with the creatures of the warp? Corvo said.
The warrior smiled a smile that had little of humanity left to it.
My name is Kelenkir, and I am your death.
Kelenkir attacked. He moved with such speed that Corvo was almost cut in two by his first attack. When he parried the sword, its fell energies reacted with the power field of his blade, causing such an explosion both of them were thrown backwards. They recovered together and leapt, roaring at one another again. They fought furiously, pressing back and forth as they attempted to draw each other into rash attack. Corvo expected a savage contest, but his opponent appeared to be as technical a warrior as he was a berserk, relying on false openings and feints. Corvo guardedly responded to a couple of these to gauge the warrior's skills. There he met savagery, a flurry of hard attacks that jarred his sword hand. Restraint followed offense, the Night Lord dropping back into careful probing once his assault proved ineffective, before attacking again with astounding violence. So it proceeded. In the wider battle, the Ultramarines' greater numbers began to tell. The gantry was retaken. The traitors were fragmented and pushed back. None dared intervene in the contest between Corvo and Kelenkir. They battled blade to blade, heroes of myth born anew in ceramite. A klaxon blared 5 times.
Dawn! The light comes! Corollus foxed. Stand ready!
A faint glow came into the chamber, growing more intense by the second. The engines whined louder at its approach. Corvo arced his sword over his head, sending Kellenkir rocking backwards on his feet. Through the shower of sparks and energy discharge, he saw the far tunnels blazing golden. Light burst into the chamber like a flood of water. Where it touched, the stone answered with sparkling green flecks of its own, greatest where the room had been damaged by the battle. The light was sluggish, slow enough to see it tentatively creep over the machines and secret places of the room. It grew slower the nearer it came to the center of the chamber. Seeing light so retarded in speed was among the most bizarre things Corvo had ever seen. Kellenkir had his back to the hindered Dawn, and so it hit Corvo's eyes first, overwhelming his auto-senses and dazzling him. It was viscous and scorching as molten iron. Corvo flung up his arm. Kellenkir's blade whistled at him, black smoke boiling from it in the light. The tip cut under Corvo's hurried defense and hit his plastron. The ceramite parted, and the sword scraped across Corvo's fused ribcage. Terrific pain burst from the cut, and it was all Corvo could do to keep to his feet. A following blow nearly ended him. He tottered back, barely managing to deflect a third attack. Kellenkir was nearly on him, their breastplates knocking together, blood-fouled breath hot on his face. Desperately, Corvo twisted his sword inward and down, flinging Kellenkir's blade wide. Kellenkir responded by barging Corvo off his feet. His sword still smoking, Kellenkir stood over the downed ultramarine and raised the demon blade high. The Night Lords shrank back as the Dawn burst through the entrance to the primary location Alpha. The cavern blazed, the Nostramans holding up hands to cover lenses darkened to maximum opacity. The light spilled from the Pharos across time and space, illuminating the grim interior of the Nightfall's command deck, causing the mortal crew to scream in pain. Dantioch worked the machine banks. Every dial was turned to maximum. Power needles inched their way across their gauges into the red zone. Every precaution he had taken in the past, he brazenly disregarded now.
"Lord Krukesh," said Dantioch, limping across the room. "Everything is prepared. I must join you upon the tuning stage."
"Do not attempt to trick me, Dantioch."
"The beam must be anchored at this end," explained Dantioch. "You have proven adept at the use of the beacon, but it has to be focused at this end. Once you step through, your influence on the machines will waver, and you risk becoming lost. Only I have the expertise to do this. I must focus the beam for you."
"You have performed this action before?"
"Many times," lied Dantioch. "It is by these means that Pollux was brought here. We must be swift. Only while the light event is in process will there be enough power to project you all the way to the Nightfall. If we tarry, the energies will dissipate and we will not be able to attempt the translocation again until the evening at the earliest."
"Very well," snapped Krukesh. "Atramenta!"
His terminators joined him on the tuning stage. Primary location Alpha howled with energy. Dantioch had never dared open the conduits so fully. The room trembled. Stone creaked. In the walls, the green glimmers called out by the sunrise shone with an intensity unseen, dancing in agitation.
"It is ready, my lord. You must step forward. It is as simple as walking from one room to another."
One of his Atramenta made to go first, but Krukesh restrained him.
"Wait!"
He unclipped a skull from his trophy chains and hurled it at the command deck. It shattered into splinters against a filthy bulwark.
"You do not lie, Dantioch," said Krukesh. "Very impressive. Scryvok, join us. The rest of you remain here. Once we are through, we will provide you with the location of the Nightfall's fleet. Prepare to return to your ships and depart for rendezvous."
"Ready for translocation," said Dantioch. An earthquake shook the room. Sparks burst from a console in the rank.
"This is to be expected. The strain of so long range a projection is great. Hurry!"
Krukesh motioned his men forward. Dantioch screwed his eyes shut and concentrated. He was not a superstitious man. He did not hold with the bizarre creed of the tech adepts of Mars. He was a scientist of the purest sort. But now
he uttered a silent prayer. Primary location Alpha shook. The image of the Nightfall glowed with bright power. The one named Scryvok turned to look at him, realization dawning on his face as the light of dawn poured into primary location Alpha and the mountain screamed.
No! Stop him! Stop him! This is a trap!
Kellanvar was fighting on the gantry when the golden light flooded the chamber. Both sides battling high above the machines faltered at its dazzling glare, but the Night Lords were worse affected, and several were felled. Kellanvar fought to keep his eyes open. Half-blinded, he kicked the warrior he was fighting backward, cutting his arm off at the elbow with a tremendous blow from his axe. Kellanvar stamped on the downed Space Marine's head, cracking his helmet and knocking him unconscious. Auto-sensors beeped, turning his lenses almost opaque. Still, his eyes streamed with tears. The pain from the light was nearly unbearable. They were losing. They had to withdraw.
Kellanvar,
he shouted, searching the engine room floor for his brother. He found him soon enough, dueling with the Ultramarine's captain. What he saw in the golden light rocked him to the core. His brother was not alone. He fancied that a creature clung to Kellanvar's back, spindly, many-jointed legs wrapped around his greaves, its body bent around his backpack, its head alongside his, long snout jutting over his shoulder. Thin lips rested against Kellanvar's ear, whispering secrets that Kellanvar never wanted to hear. The half-glimpsed beast appeared to be climbing inside his brother. Its limbs had sunk partway into those of Kellanvar. Sickly flesh spread over the plates of his armor in an attempt to envelop it. The creature was translucent, but all too real. Its presence did something to his brother, for Kellanvar fought unaffected by the light. The Ultramarine's captain sprawled on the floor, hand shading his eyes. His power soared up as Kellanvar rained blow after blow upon him. He used no bladecraft, but hacked blindly at the captain's sword. Each contact brought forth a crackling bang from the power field and a wash of unnatural light from the blade. The howl of the quantum engines had become deafening, a throbbing noise that thumped through the chamber and drove out all other sound.
Kellanvar!
He called again. The engines were so loud he could hardly hear his own voice. Kellanvar ran for the stairs, smashing Night Lords and Ultramarines alike aside in his rush. The creature was disappearing into his brother. He had to get it off him. He had heard of the warp entities that dwelt inside the bodies of chosen word-bearers, but they had given themselves willingly. His brother had only ever had disdain for such weakness.
The sword! Damn, Scryvok! The sword!
He decapitated an Ultramarine with his axe, shoving his headless corpse over the railing, and leapt down the stairs three at a time. If he could get the blade away from his brother, perhaps he could save him. Kellanvar bounded across the engine room floor and threw himself at Kellanvar, tackling him about the shoulders. He flinched as he touched the demon creature, but he could not feel it. It was insubstantial and passed through his armor as if it were not there. Nevertheless, the non-creature turned its unspeakable head and hissed at him. The light event was leveling out, becoming a honeyed illumination that drenched the hall. The Ultramarines recovered more quickly, and more Night Lords fell. The battle was turning against them, but Kellanvar and Kellanvar were locked in their own struggle, wrestling upon the floor as their brothers were isolated and cut down.
The sword, brother! Drop the sword!
Kellanvar grasped his brother's wrist and tried to prise open the fingers, but they were solidly wrapped around the hilt and would not come free. Kellanvar snarled. His eyes were no longer his own, but red and gold, veined like marble, the eyes of the thing he had seen in the dark. He hurled Kellanvar off. Kellanvar had always been the stronger of the two, but this was something else. Kellanvar flew through the air and crashed into the side of an alien machine. His armor dented, something gave inside him. Blood bubbled into his mouth.
I will slay you, human,
spat Kellenkir in a voice that was not his own. The Ultramarine's captain was getting to his feet. The light was draining away, pools of it collected in corners. Each shrank quickly as the stone drank it away. Behind Kellenvar, the machines sang louder and louder, shaking the mountain with their roar. Kellenkir came at the captain in a rush. Other Ultramarines were turning their attention to the fight. There were few Night Lords remaining. Boltfire smacked into Kellenkir, but the projectiles simply vanished, spirited away by the power of the demon riding Kellenkir's back.
"I have known your kind,"
shouted the captain. He had a noble's face, thought Kellenvar, patrician and disdainful as those wicked men who had hunted and used them on Nostramo. There was a face that had wanted for nothing, that had never suffered. No doubt he thought himself a paragon of virtue.
"I have seen warp spore infest machines and men. It will not stand while I draw breath. Not here, not in Ultramar."
The captain lunged hard. Kellenkir brought his sword around. Its shape warped before Kellenvar's eyes, his vision doubled. He looked upon his brother bearing a plain blade. He saw a misshapen thing squirming its way into Kellenkir's body, the blade, its impossibly long fingernail, dripping with blood. The explosion as the swords met threw both combatants backward. The Ultramarine came off worse, lifted off his feet and dashed against thick metal cable housing, crawling up the side of an engine. Kellenkir braced against the force of the blast, sliding backwards across the stone. Painful lights burned around him, a sick aura of corruption. More Ultramarines were coming.
"Kellenkir, leave him! We must depart! The day is lost!"
The possessed legionary turned and reached out a clawed hand to him.
"The brother," said the demon's voice. "So long you have held this one back. So much he gave to keep you safe. Look you now upon yourself and see what a thing you are."
Images of weakness flooded Kellenvar's mind, and he collapsed to his knees, screaming in psychic pain. He saw himself as a feeble boy, forever at his brother's heels, holding him back, forcing his brother to commit terrible acts to protect him. It was his fault. He had turned his brother into a monster. His fault. If it were not for Kellenvar, no. He would not yield. He would not die, not like this.
"If not for me, he would be dead," spat the headsman. "He would have died on Nostramo."
He got to his feet, pushing the demon from his mind with a great effort of will. Kellenkir was advancing on the fallen captain. The Ultramarine was dazed, his sword gone. He struggled to sit as Kellenkir raised Scryvok's cursed weapon.
"With the death of you, Lucretius Corvo, shall I be whole, a worthy gift to my master. Ingress, ingress to the world of meat and dust,"
howled the creature that Kellenkir was becoming. Kellenvar saw the demon now without the need for the forest's light. It had sunk most of the way into his brother, parasiting his soul. Kellenvar had known many Kellenkirs in his life. The brother, protector, fellow warrior, friend, murderer. None of them remained in the thing menacing the Ultramarine. He knew what he must do. With shaking hands, he lifted his axe high above his head and brought it down hard upon the pulsing back of the thing that had been his brother. The weapon's field boomed like thunder as it cut deep into his brother's power pack. Smoke vented from the damaged machinery inside. Kellenkir let out a double scream. The warp spawn upon him thrashed, half raising from his back. Kellenvar wrenched out his axe, raised it, and struck his brother again, cutting deep into his side. Kellenkir collapsed, turning as he fell to his knees. He looked up at Kellenvar and blinked. The red and gold marbled eyes of the demon were gone, his own eyes now fixed upon Kellenvar's axe.
"Brother,"
he said, caught between fury and confusion.
Why do you strike me?
It is over, Kilankia. You are free. Scryvok betrayed you.
You call that freedom? You took my power!
Kilankia snarled.
You always were so weak, little brother. I should never have protected you. I should kill you now and correct my mistake.
Kelenvar shook his head. His birth heart was leaden in his chest. His secondary heart felt like an abomination nestled beside it, something he had never asked for. His power was a weight on him. Kurz was right. The universe was unfeeling, merciless, cruel. There was no hope.
No, brother,
he said, too quietly to be heard over the scream of the Pharos.
We both died a long time ago.
Kelenvar swung his axe around with all his might. Its keen edge swept off the vent of Kelenkir's backpack, the energy field crackling. The vent fell to the floor. Kelenkir's head followed it. Blood pooled around Kelenvar's feet. The Ultramarine's captain stared, swaying unsteadily to his feet, clutching at the sparking rent in his armor. He had a bolt pistol in his hand. Kelenvar stood tall and threw his axe aside.
Traitor, said the captain.
Three rounds hammered into Kelenvar's chest. Seeing their leader open fire, the Ultramarines followed suit. A dozen bolts hit him at once. They shattered his armor. The explosions of the mass reactives were separated from each other by milliseconds. They obliterated his flesh, and Kelenvar felt no more. The shattered headsman fell. His corpse, so much ragged metal and pulverized meat, came to rest lying atop the other. Corvo lowered his gun and put a hand to the crack in his breastplate. The blood was slowing, but the pain was of an unclean kind that refused to die. When his men came to steady him, he couldn't have shrugged them off had he wanted to.
The sword, he said hoarsely. It must be destroyed.
Sword? One asked.
Find it.
His men searched the slaughtered night lords in the golden dazzle of the room, turning them over to look beneath.
There's nothing here, my lord.
Impossible, Corvo said.
As he said the word, he knew it for a lie. He had seen too many impossible things in the last few years to have any faith in the word anymore. The alien engine's pitch was building, a booming throb now over a pulsing vibrato of infrasound that caused his wound to burn.
What is happening?
He demanded, his vox set at maximum in an effort to be heard. Tech Marine Corollus looked up from the bank of Mechanicum machines.
Overload. The draw on the engines increases exponentially as the light event progresses.
Corvo shoved the men supporting him away and hobbled over.
These dials, they show the power draw. See how they are all creeping into the red. As far as I can tell, these machines act as a governor for the Xenos engines, dictating how much energy might be utilized. That light event has charged them. The modifications act as a modulator, smoothing out the energy draw. Most of this machinery seems to exist to allow the safe bleeding off of excess power to allow directed operation. Someone's directing it now, but that someone's taken all the governors off.
What will happen when they reach the maximum? Said Corvo.
As my tutors on Mars would say, Captain, the Omnis Sire acts mysteriously. The ways of the motive force may be understood, from positive to negative and on through the circuit. That which guides it may not.
You do not know?
No. That is what they generally meant when they said that.
And if we proceed with the plan?
The machines are a break. If we remove it entirely during the light event...
The tech marine shrugged. The arms of his high-tech adept's harness mimicked the motion.
Give me a theoretical, Corollus.
Destruction of the Mechanicum devices will render the Pharos inoperable until they are replaced as per the plan. But there is a risk, I calculate, of 45%, that we may damage it beyond repair should we remove their moderating influence altogether at this juncture, ventured the tech marine.
Corvo ground his teeth. He tasted blood in his mouth. I'll not be the one to destroy the Pharos so readily. If I must, I must. But for the time being, our objective remains only to cripple it.
He looked around the entrances to primary location Ultra, now brighter shapes within the diffuse illumination of the machine hall.
We are alone. Set the chargers for remote detonation. If this light event is done, and we have a better understanding of the current practical, we will execute our orders.
The engines roared. The green light emanating from their slots grew in radiance. Arcs of lightning whipped out with loud cracks, leaping all over the engines.
Might I suggest we wait from a safe distance, my lord? Shouted Corollus over the noise.
You might suggest, Brother Techmarine. How far?
Your theoretical is as good as mine, Captain, but we must go now.
Scryvok's warning came too late. He pulled a bolter from the grasp of the warrior next to him and opened fire, but his bolts never met their mark. They slowed, pulled at by a force emanating from the interface between primary location Alpha and the Nightfall. They came to a stop, spinning miniature missiles, propellant roaring uselessly, until they burned out and hung there, glinting softly. A strange stillness fell. Dantioch's eyes were cold and hard and full of hate. The mountain drew in a breath. Then the Pharos sang an apocalyptic fanfare. The bolts flew suddenly from the room and on to the Nightfall. Equipment was wrenched from desks. Parchments and data wafers whipped into the air in a storm, pulled into vortex of light turning around the hole in space, leading to the Nightfall's command deck. Krukesh's triumph transformed into horror. He bellowed orders that nobody heard and raised his gun. One of his Atramentar bodyguards turned to escape. As soon as he lifted one foot from the stage, he was yanked from the ground, crashing into the other two that were flanking Krukesh. All three hit the field edge and were caught. They hurtled around and around the vortex's whipping arms, their forms distorted by the titanic energies exerted upon them by the Xenos machine and tearing them limb from limb. Dantioch's chair was torn from its mountings and tumbled up off the floor and through the threshold. The other Nightlords around the tuning stage were ripped from their feet and fell, screaming, into the light. The view of the Nightfall had become a narrow circle, swallowed by a roaring swirl of unfettered alien energies. Lightning thrashed it, stabbing out into the room, earthing itself in the armor of legionaries and bursting them apart with crackling energy. The quantum pulses reached their screaming apex. Green light burned from the rock of primary location Alpha. The remaining Nightlords screamed as their sensitive eyes burned out and their eardrums were shattered by the roar of the device. Another lowing horn blast echoed from every opening in the mountain. Actinic green flares haloed around the peak. Mount Pharos shook as the full power of its quantum engines was unleashed for the first time in an age. The energies streamed through Dantioch, ripping at the fabric of his being. The rush of it was exhilarating. His pain was forgotten, even as he knew that he was being disassembled atom by atom. Warnings bleated from the paltry Imperial machinery. One console after another gave out under the strain, showering bouncing sparks over the black floor. Lines of cables burst into flame. Metal melted. The mountain trembled. The grinding of stone rumbled up through the corridors as the black glass cracked. Outside, great cliffs tumbled from their footings and roared down into the lowlands. Pollux was tugged at by the draw of the beam, only the spiked manacles biting into his wrists and ankles, preventing him from being sucked into the singularity growing in the wall of the Pharos. He rose up from his cross, dragged at by the light, blood streaming from him where his restraints bit into his flesh.
Dantioch! Stop! Stop! You will destroy us all!
His words were lost in the mountain's roar. It sounded again, louder than the greatest Titan's war horn. Dantioch was lifted into the air, his arms out, green light whirling around him. The last Night Lords were plucked away, crumpled into shreds at the edge of the interface field, laid low by lightning or smashed into the walls of primary location Alpha. Those that hit the vortex askance left limbs behind. Scryvok took his chances and ran forwards, diving into it headfirst. And so, only Krukesh remained. The Lord of the Cryroptera leaned into the storm, head bowed, fighting to plant one foot of his mighty Terminator plate in front of the other. Incredibly, he managed three full steps, teeth gritted, dark eyes narrowed against the gold dazzle of the Pharos. Surrounded by the wavering shimmer of unfettered energy, Dantioch turned in the air towards Pollux. He looked his friend in the eye one final time and bowed his head. Then he turned back into the vortex light and roared out his pain, his need to see the Night Lords destroyed, driving on the Pharos to destruction. Krukesh's legs were tugged out from under him, his gauntleted fingers scrabbled at the floor as he was lifted up. He went hurtling into the blazing field, his wordless scream loud enough to compete with the Pharos's roar. Pollux screwed his eyes shut. Primary location Alpha exploded. Pollux's restraints ripped free of the cross, and he was flung across the room, slamming into the far wall with bone-cracking force. Every machine in the chamber detonated simultaneously. In a heartbeat, the light went out. Barabbas Dantioch dropped to the floor, armor smoking. His head hit the stone hard, dislodging his mask. It clattered away across the floor, and all was still. For the first time in untold eons, the engines of the Pharos fell silent.